Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers who are working on solutions that face our fellow individual community members, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This is George Koster, your host. This episode is part of our series exploring COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area. Back in April of 2020, when we decided to create this ongoing series on COVID-19's impact, first on nonprofits and then on small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area, we, like you, had no idea how long the pandemic would go on and what the health and economic impact would be in our community. Going into 2021, the pandemic is now killing more people, shutting down more nonprofits and small businesses, along with wiping out the livelihoods of families, neighborhoods, and communities. We will continue to shine a spotlight on the nonprofits and small businesses that make up the fabric of our community, along with the founders and staff who are struggling to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on their operations, services, and sustainability until we can all get to the other side of the pandemic. Along the way, we will also share with you all the amazing solutions that our nonprofits, small businesses, foundations, and government leaders are working on to help us all get to the other side of the pandemic and come together to rebuild our communities with more economic, social, and environmental equality.
Simply reopening is important, but it's only one thing. All of the performing arts, whether it's a nightclub or whether it's the opera, have been shuttered for 15 months. It will be 18 months by the time any of them begin to reopen their doors. I mean, restaurants have had a hard time of it, but they have been open in one way or another, many of them. All of the performing arts organizations have been shuttered. So how you get an entire sector back on its feet after 18 months of closure is really difficult. And we're going to need support, you know, for years to come to make sure that these organizations are afloat, that they're able to hire these workers that we've been trying to help through this fund, and that the entire ecosystem gets back on its feet.
This is the Executive Director of Theater Bay Area, Brad Erickson. We wanted to host Theater Bay Area because they are another one of our longtime performing arts organizations that is focused on the incubation and support of the San Francisco Bay Area performing arts ecosystem. As a response to the COVID-19 pandemic impact on our performing arts workers, Theater Bay Area created the Performing Arts Workers Fund. To amplify the impact of the Performing Arts Workers Fund, Brad and his team brought together both the Dancers Group and Intermusic SF to participate in the Performing Arts Workers Fund. I'm joined remotely by the Executive Director of Theater Bay Area, Brad Erickson. Thanks for being here, Brad.
Sure, happy to.
Theater Bay Area, again, another one of those really wonderful nonprofits of the 6,000 in San Francisco that so many people have no idea exist. So, Brad, I think it would be really great if you could provide the audience a background on who is Theater Bay Area and then some of your key programs.
Sure. So we are 46 years old this year. We are, you know, heading towards that big 50 anniversary, not too far away. We are a service organization for the theater community in the greater Bay Area. And we define that really broadly. From the get-go, have served both individual theater makers, practitioners, artists, along with theater companies. We have sister type organizations across the country, but we are one of the few that actually look to serve that whole spectrum of the community, both the individual art maker and the art organization. And we've been that way from the get-go. We were not formed by a government agency. We weren't formed by a big foundation that thought this would be a good thing for the Bay Area to have, Hewlett or someone who have been very faithful funders of us over the many, many years. But we were formed by a group of theater makers, individual artists, and theater companies. Some of them are still around, some are not, but ACT was there, The Magic was there, Berkeley Rep was there, smaller organizations were there, and individual artists to create an organization that would do important work for the community as a whole that none of them could get to on their own time. And so that sort of work and the things that they set out for this group to do 46 years ago are largely the same sorts of things that we're doing all these many years later. And that is around helping to connect the theater makers with opportunities. So we've been doing that for years through our general auditions, where 400 actors come over the course of a 3-day weekend and are seen by something like 80 or 90 different companies all at once. It's a huge event for the actors, but it's a huge event for the theaters as well. They get to see an awful lot of people all at once, and they get to connect with each other too. There's a very big and important social component of it. So we're trying to connect people to opportunities and to resources. And that's true both for individual artists and the companies. So for the last 20-something years, we've been running different granting programs. CASH is our most famous one, our flagship of our granting programs. I was actually in a small organization, and that was the first grant that I'd ever won, was a CASH grant, which was during its initial rollout before I was a staff member at TVA. And I know how important that was to this tiny little organization that I was one of the founders of and forming, to get that money to be able to get a show up on its feet. And for many, many organizations over the last 20 years, small organizations, individual artists, it's very often the first grant that they get, or one of the few grants that they're able to get, because grants typically go to larger budget organizations, and very often they're just not available to individual artists. But the CASH grants have been for 20-something years, and that's been a big part of what we do as well. And then we do professional development, we do trainings for folks and for companies as well, and we do that in classes, courses, and annual conference. And for many, many years, folks would have known us through our printed magazine, which was called Callboard, then Theater Bay Area. We're continuing that journalistic tradition now online through our website and through our biweekly newsletter that we put out. But we do hire journalists to go cover stories in the field.
When you say artists, it's really actors, actresses, or someone who basically presents as an actor, if you will. And then there's playwrights,
directors, designers, technicians, all of those folks, and very much too, the individual practitioner includes, you know, theater administrators who are trying to make, you know, a go of it and get started in their careers, or, you know, perhaps veterans as well.
So the entire ecosystem, if you will, performing arts. Yeah. So much of theater is about in-person experience, right? Especially the auditions, et cetera. So how has COVID-19 impacted Theater Bay Area over this last year?
So yeah, as you're talking about the auditions, this general auditions that we do once a year for the 400 is also then bookended by auditions that we do specifically for the North Bay. So for like Sonoma County and Napa County and North Marin as well. And then also for the South Bay. And those two regional auditions were coming up last summer. And clearly, we were not going to be able to do an in-person audition up in Santa Rosa or down in San Jose. And so we actually did virtual general auditions for those regions. And we had folks, you know, make video recordings of their audition pieces, send them to us. And then we created these big reels that we then sent to the companies in the South Bay and the North Bay that wanted to look at actors that were specifically in their area. We're looking at potentially doing something like that again as a general audition later this summer for the entire Bay Area region. And we are really looking forward to getting to an in-person general audition, hopefully in February of 22, you know, should things continue to go in the way that they are. But we've had to make a lot of pivots in this way. Our annual conference was scheduled for last April. Well, clearly that had to be canceled. We've had in-person classes and courses and things that we normally do, convenings, all of which naturally had to be migrated online. And we've been doing, you know, through Zoom rooms, basically, in various different formats like that, to be able to continue to provide the same sorts of programming, but in a virtual setting. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that will keep going forward. Will it be a mix of in-person convening? You know, maybe there's a class, a seminar that people are taking in person, but there's also a virtual aspect to it. Or maybe people can also like tune in that way, because there are some advantages, right? Because we're in the Bay Area. Traffic is normally horrible. You don't have to sit in a car for an hour and a half to get here from, I don't know, San Jose, or from, you know, Walnut Creek to get to San Francisco. You can just tune in. So there are some ways that the pivoting to digital has made things more accessible for folks, but we also know that we're missing that in-person contact, and we're missing the in-person sort of networking and relationship building that always happens with an event. So we're looking at, you know, how does this new way of doing things balance out, just as our theater companies are looking at boy, do we keep any of this online programming? Do we keep any of this digital programming that we're doing when we reopen? Are we going to have, you know, a show be recorded as well? Or they're looking at that balance because they too have engaged some new and different audiences through the digital programming that hadn't been coming to the theater, you know, in person, but they are longing to get back to that in-person show. So we're sort of parallel with them in many ways.
One of the reasons I wanted you to be on the show, Brad, was Theater Bay Area started the Performing Arts Workers Fund. And for all those listeners, Wayne from Dancers Group and Corey from Intermusic are all, you know, woven into this. So kind of walk the audience through why you created Performing Arts Workers Fund. What is it? And, you know, how can people help?
Yeah. So this was literally a week or two into the shutdown. So late last March, about a year ago, a little more, I actually got a call from Eric Ting at CalShakes. And there had been some conversations that were happening on Facebook around, oh my gosh, there are all of these artists who have been thrown out of work, all these performing arts workers who, you know, had gigs lined up and they were suddenly being thrown out of work, or there were people working in the box office. There was no box office anymore. And what could be done? And was there a group that might be able to help? And oh, Theater Bay Area, is this something that you should take on? So I had a really great conversation with Eric about that. And it was a fantastic idea. Spoke to my board chair, Debbie Chin, who was very excited about getting this going, and then quickly reached out to Wayne at Dancers Group and to Corey at Intermusic SF. They too were very excited about getting going with something like this. And within a matter of a couple of weeks, put together this program that would provide grants for people who had lost income or were about to lose income because their gig had been canceled in increments of $500, $1,000, $1,500. We raised the money really quickly and we kept raising it. And as we raised it, we would convene panels and we would give it away. We would raise some more money and we would give it away. And in this time, we've raised over $640,000 and we've funded more than 750 of these performers with some money. And it's been an amazing experience as both individual donors, over 800 of them have contributed to the fund, along with, you know, family foundations and other organizations who in philanthropy have given us money for this fund. But really, the bulk of it has come from individual people. And that has been really exciting to see. And we're continuing it because, you know, the reopening is coming, but they're still not working. These performing arts workers are still out of work. And 40% of them have not been receiving unemployment. So this has been a very, very difficult time for folks who were employed in the performing arts. And we wanted to create this fund, not only for the folks that people see and think about, the actors and the singers and the dancers and the musicians, but for the people backstage and the people in the box office and all of the workers, which is why we called it the Performing Arts Workers Relief Fund.
And so if someone who is listening wanted to help, they could go to your website?
Yeah, so it's theaterbayarea.org. We spell theater the British way, R-E.org, and you'll see a donate there. You'll also see more about the Performing Arts Workers Fund and how to give to that. And we are continuing with it. So that is still happening. And we do have over 150 applications on the wait list. People who have turned in their applications who are absolutely eligible, who are in real need, that we do not have funds at this time to be able to support those requests. And we would like to. So we are looking for more applications and more donations to come in.
I know through the latest round of, for lack of a better term, let's just call it CARES Act 3, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with the new Biden-Harris administration, are there pieces of legislation either at a state level, at a city or county level, that people can write, can lobby, and help their favorite theater arts workers?
So, you know, the field has really benefited from these various relief funds, both under the previous administration and under Biden. So the Paycheck Protection Program has been vital for organizations, and being able to come back for that a second time has been really crucial. There might even be a third draw. That has been great, and encouraging anyone to, you know, write to the speaker. If Nancy Pelosi is your representative, as she is mine, or whoever your representative is, to say that this is so important to our senators, and finding ways to, you know, bring more of those funds in. I think a lot of folks might have heard about the Shuttered Venues program, which is a lot of money. And when it went live on Friday, there were so many people trying to apply that the site crashed. I think a lot of us figured that it might, and it did. So the SBA is working feverishly to get it back up online and to make those funds available. But that will be very, very important to groups. And, you know, some of this is about saying thanks. But there is more that needs to be done. And I'm on the board of Californians for the Arts. We have a very big ask. We are asking the state, with the money that it is receiving from the federal relief packages itself, to allot $1 billion to the arts and the creative economy over the next 4 years. So $250 million a year over the next 4 years to help this sector get back on its feet, because simply reopening is important, but it's only one thing. All of the performing arts, whether it's a nightclub or whether it's the opera, have been shuttered for 15 months. It will be 18 months by the time any of them begin to reopen their doors. I mean, restaurants have had a hard time of it, but they have been open in one way or another, many of them. All of the performing arts organizations have been shuttered. So how you get an entire sector back on its feet after 18 months of closure is really difficult. And we're going to need support, you know, for years to come to make sure that these organizations are afloat, that they're able to hire these workers that we've been trying to help through this fund, and that the entire ecosystem gets back on its feet.
So it's not only writing to your federal representative, like, you know, Jackie Speier or Nancy Pelosi, but it's also writing to your state representative, David Chu, Scott Wiener.
Phil Ting, who's very, very influential, and to, yeah, all of our folks in Sacramento as well. Because the more that they hear from constituents, the more that they listen. They really do pay attention to these communications, whether it's an email or whether it's a phone call quickly to their office saying, I think you really need to do more to support the arts. No one's going to argue with you. You just place the call and they'll record it, but it's important. And they keep track of that interaction with their constituents.
So Brad, over your many years of both working in theater, but also specifically now with Theater Bay Area, could you share with the audience one of your favorite stories that you think is a great example of how Theater Bay Area impacts our performing arts community?
One of the things that we also do, and it was a newish program for us 7 or 8 years ago, was we created the TBA Awards. So it's, as someone said, it's sort of like the Tonys of the Bay Area. And it was something actually that folks have been talking to us about. And a longtime staff member, Dale Albright, who was our programs director for many years, was really, really advocating for it. We finally got it off its feet after doing a lot of homework. And we had the first event was at the Geary stage at ACT's home stage. And it was just amazing to see people coming up on the red carpet. They were dressed to the nines, having their photos taken. And I was backstage coming out to say, you know, some opening remarks, and the place was just going crazy. It was just thunderous. The noise level was amazing. And people backstage were telling me to tell them to be quiet, tell them to shut up. And I thought, I am not going to get out there and tell these people to shut up. This is their event. They're excited and they're going to yell and scream all night long. That is what they want to do. It was gratifying to see a program get that sort of reaction in its first moment. I actually had a little bit of feedback from some funders who were in the room and had their ears splitting, but I thought, you know what? It's not for you. You know, you don't have to come next year, frankly. It's for these actors and for these designers and all of these artists who are in this room and being celebrated. And that's who it's for. And if they want to celebrate each other and, you know, shout and yell, then that's what they should do. And it was really fun to see. And it was fun to have, you know, a program just be embraced so incredibly enthusiastically in its first few minutes.
Thank you. It's a great story. So final question, what do you think are some of the positive things that could come out of our global pandemic, our economic downdraft / meltdown? What are some of the great things that you think could come out that would really help our performing arts community and our audience at large?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing already in the way that the arts have been included in the relief packages, and I have to give a lot of credit to Speaker Pelosi for making that happen, and to our California delegation for making that happen. I think, as people know, the nonprofits and the arts had never been part of any SBA program in the past, right? And so they're having a little bit of a difficult time trying to figure out who we are exactly. But that was put in because our leaders understood that the arts are actually an important part of the economy. It's something that we as art advocates have been saying for many, many years. And I feel that people are now understanding it. The public is understanding it in a different way. Our policy leaders are understanding it in a different way because we've actually seen what it's like to not have the arts and the performing arts for over a year. So I hope that that message that we've been trying to get across will stick. And I also feel like in other conversations in rooms that I'm in with, you know, just friends and colleagues, people that we call civilians who are not, you know, in the arts, that's not what they do for a living, are just so eager to get back into the theater, to go back to the symphony, to see live performing arts in the way that they're hungry for that. And I'm hoping that people will remember how much it means to them to see a show, to go to a live concert, to see a live dance event, and how impoverished we've been, as much as people have been doing things on screens this year and have been really creative with trying to get this up and out. There's a difference when we're all together and in the same room and watching things live. And, you know, I hope that people will remember that and they'll remember to support it as well.
Thank you. All really good points. I think I would add to that the other piece that we were talking about earlier that you had mentioned with regards to the auditions. And what I've heard over this last year from many performing arts organizations is opening of the fourth wall, the whole idea that now people can come in and experience a virtual performance, you know, versus being in person. So I think that will also persist as my guess.
I think so too.
So thank you, Brad, for sharing Theater Bay Area's work today. We will make sure that listeners have your contact information, website, and social media so that they can get engaged in supporting the Performing Arts Workers Fund and Theater Bay Area. Please stay safe and healthy as we all work our way through this very strange new normal.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voice of the Executive Director of Theater Bay Area, Brad Erickson. To find out more about Theater Bay Area and to support the Performing Arts Workers Fund, as well as their other programs, go to theaterbayarea.org. Please listen to our interview with Wayne Hazard from the Dancers Group in episode 43 and Corey Combs from Intermusic SF in episode 52 for more insights into how these organizations came together to provide a financial helping hand to the thousands of unemployed performing arts workers in our community. Please tune in to next week's show where our theme is the importance of public libraries and how they have been dealing with the pandemic. For our Thursday, May 20th show, we will be rebroadcasting on KSFP our interview with Lucy Faulkner and Don Logsdon, the co-founders of Serendipity Films, about their documentary, Free for All, Inside the Public Library. And on Friday, May 21st, we have another one-hour special featuring a panel discussion co-hosted with friend of the show, Susan Stewart-Clark of Common Knowledge, with Jayanti Adelman, Director of Library Services from the City of Hayward Public Library, and Derek Wolfgram, the Library Director from the Redwood City Library. This one-hour special will be broadcast on KSFP 102.5 FM on Friday, May 21st at 7 a.m. and 2 p.m., Saturday, May 22nd at 5 p.m., and again Sunday, May 23rd at 9 a.m. We hope that you enjoyed the insights, points of view, and personal stories from the voices of changemakers and their nonprofits and small businesses featured in this series. To find out more and get engaged with the nonprofits, small businesses, and staff members featured in the series, please go to my website, georgecoster.com, and click on Voices of the Community to find links to the extended versions of these interviews and to listen to the entire series. After listening to these stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to provide a hand up to your fellow community members. I want to thank my associate producer, Eric Estrada, and Casey Nance at Citron Studios, along with the wonderful crew at the San Francisco Public Press and KSFP. Voices of the Community is a member of Intersection for the Arts, which allows us to offer you a tax deduction for your contributions. Please go to georgecoster.com and click on the donate link to make a donation to help us provide future shows just like this one. While you're on our website, you can enjoy our archived past shows, which feature community voices working on solutions to critical issues facing Northern California communities. And you can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about future shows, as well as shows and events from the organizations that are included in our episodes. Take us along on your next COVID walk by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at George Koster, and we'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas. So send us an email to george@georgekoster.com. I'm George Koster in San Francisco, and thank you for listening.